What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Don't Drop the Ball podcast. I am your host, Steven Javarucci. I'm here with my co-host, Pablo Rosero. Pablo, that was one of the wildest drafts we have seen. So many trades, so many storylines. What were your initial thoughts? What stood out to you?
So, initially, obviously I'm a Dolphins fan. Lack of movement from them. Not surprised. Kind of surprised they didn't go in another direction, but I can't be mad at it. Obviously, having Tyreek Hill as your first and second round picks is good, especially when you talk about the run on wide receivers and the trades. Mm-hmm. And we should just start it with that.
Okay, I got
what
you.
What heck went on with those wide receivers?
Man, it was so funny in the pre-draft process. Everybody was, you know, speculating, the Chiefs are going to get something. Maybe you could just whoever falls to 29 or 30 or the Packers, then maybe they could wait till their second first round pick and they might be able to get someone like a Jahan Dotson or some of the other guys, the Treylon Burks. But that is not what happened. The wide receivers went early and often. After Drake London, the first receiver taken at number 8, what did you think about Drake London being taken over, you know, a Garrett Wilson or a Jameson Williams?
You know, I said in my in our mock draft that I didn't think there was any receiver worth taking at 8. And for me, it took some seeing how the board fell. Definitely mm-hmm. helped me kind of rationalize that pick. I think it's a good pick for them. Yeah. The skill set London gives you, and obviously, you know, the Falcons aren't thinking next year. They're thinking 2 years from now, 3 years from now. You know, London's the best fit next to a guy like Calvin Ridley, next to a guy like Pitts. These are guys that can handle everything short and intermediate. London's a dynamic playmaker who can take the top off of defenses. And that's mm-hmm. exactly what he should be expected to do. And so I think it's the right pick for them. You know, Wilson at 10 to the Jets shocked me. I thought that was definitely Jameson Williams.
Yeah.
The Saints traded up for Olave at 11.
That was wild.
I think not only was it wild, but that should have been the precursor that, okay, something's about to happen with the wide receiver market. Because mm-hmm. then you have Detroit coming right back down and taking J-Mo.
20 spots. 20 spots they moved up. That was... spots. Yeah, it was very clear that all the free agent moves, the free agent moves, and then as well as the trades, Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams getting their new deals, resetting the wide receiver market. Teams guys like our old buddy Christian Kirk getting his money. Like
there you go, Trebalky.
Yeah, you got to pay these guys, and you know, getting them cost controlled for 5 seasons, it matters, and it's, you know, the league has finally caught on that you need these guys, you need these playmakers, and you need, especially, you know, in a, you know, relatively, you know, people will call it a weak top end draft in terms of like talent at positions like offensive tackle or quarterback. Yeah, receivers, it was the go-to for everybody, you know, after London and then Wilson at 10, and then boom, what did it go? It went Olave and then Jameson Williams. All of them were all in the same wide receiver room at Ohio State, which is hilarious. Reminds me of the Alabama receiver room a couple seasons ago. So then after Jameson Williams looked like he had a couple spot break from receivers, and then Jahan Dotson, and then
from 12 to 16, and then
and then
18. Which that was shocking. I could not believe Dotson went before Burks.
They went really high. I was not expecting it, but in hindsight, it does make a lot of sense. And then the Tennessee Titans. Trading
AJ Brown.
What that was? Do they have cap problems? Like what's going on in Tennessee? How do you not keep AJ Brown?
From what I understand, from what I was told, from what I read, was that they offered Brown $16 million a year.
That's lower. What?
But. He requested, and understand where the wide receiver market is right now. understand the caliber of player that AJ Brown is.
Yeah.
He still has a way to go of proving that he does belong in that upper echelon of receivers. Not to say he hasn't done enough already, but there's still a ways to go for him.
Mm.
He apparently requested only $22 million a year.
Whoa. How are you not going to pay him 22?
So the feeling is, what I see, and it goes with the way Ryan Tannehill's contract is structured, the way, you know, they just dealt for Bobby Trees, Robert Woods, and they trust him. The way I see this is a situation where they're going to reset themselves to open themselves up to continue to improve with guys that fit their system without having to overpay them in a short period of time. And I mean, it comes down to thinking, like, is Ryan Tannehill the guy you want leading your offense to a Super Bowl? By not paying AJ Brown. Exactly. By not paying AJ Brown and being able to, you know, save yourself that money and being able to get a guy that is very, has a very similar skill set. And, you know, his comp from, I don't even know who it was. I was watching the ESPN broadcast. Had his comp as Debo Samuel / AJ Brown.
I saw that.
Is a bit, you know.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, but I'm not the biggest fan of that. But, you know, you don't want to pay him. You know, Tannehill's guaranteed money is done after this year. And you can feel that out. You have the questions with Derrick Henry as he gets older. He's getting more hurt. You're going to have to bring in another running back soon. So it could be a case of, you know, we might be facing a rebuild soon. So we can't, in good faith, pay him now if we're staring that down in the face in a couple of years.
It's just wild, man. They were the number one seed in the AFC this season. And, like, I you know, I think it kind of goes back to that Family Guy bit of, you know, you can have the boat or you can have the mystery box, and it could even be a boat. And what's best case scenario for Treylon Burks? He gets to the level AJ Brown is in year three.
Yes.
And this is what I'm saying. Like, what?
But you're gonna eventually have to pay him. And, you know, they made a very good offseason addition of Austin Hooper. I think he's gonna come in and be their best tight end since, you know, Delanie Walker.
Yep.
But you have to understand, this is a run first offense. They're not going away from that. They stayed with that course when Derrick Henry was hurt. So bringing in a young guy who can contribute immediately without having to pay him all that top-end money will at least give you the opportunity to go out. You can go grab a Jarvis Landry. You can go grab an Odell Beckham Jr. You know, you can still go get an impact wide receiver who can be that guy that you can throw to while allowing Treylon Burks to develop. And it's not like we haven't seen year one wide receivers come in and absolutely turn up. I mean, Ja'Marr Chase last year, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith. I mean, we're seeing it more often. These young guys are putting it together. Justin Jefferson 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Would not surprise me if this deal is similar to the Diggs-Jefferson deal that we got just 2 years ago.
I'm sure, hey, Tennessee sure hopes so, because it ended up working out for Minnesota and for the Bills. But, I mean, man, as a Giant fan, I really hate the Eagles because Roseman makes good moves. He turned the trash can that was Carson Wentz into A.J. Brown, basically.
Hey, time out. Come on. Hey, Carson Wentz for the Philadelphia Eagles. A lot of people seem to forget. Had he not torn his ACL on a fluke play where he literally took a helmet to the knee, he would have won MVP that year, and they still probably would have won the Super Bowl.
I mean, it's very possible, but here we are.
You know, here we are. And that's something we got to touch on, too. You know, winners of the draft, the Eagles are right up there.
Yeah, I mean, and when you get A.J. Brown, and I think they got Jordan Davis as well.
They got N'Kobe Dean in the third round. And listen, they were able to, early in the process, move back while earning another first-round pick next year, effectively saying, We're going to give Jalen Hurts the options, similar to what the Dolphins are doing with Tua.
Yep.
We're going to give him everything we can to see, is this our guy that'll take us to a Super Bowl? They're definitely a winner. Your New York football Giants are a winner. So let's deep dive into that. The floor is yours. Hey, what are your thoughts?
I was thrilled. It pretty much they in not in the same order, but in the mock draft I did give them Evan Neal and Kayvon Thibodeau. Just the way the board fell, it made the most sense. You know, we have an adult in the room making decisions now in Joe Shane. It's nice to have that. I thought it was very interesting, but it made a lot of sense how he went with Thibodeau first and then went with Evan Neal. He said that he had six players that were graded way above the rest, Thibodeau was the last defensive player in that group that was still available, and he said there was a large gap from Thibodeau to the next edge rusher, so they had to go grab him. And then they had a very similar grade on Evan Neal and Ike Ekwonu. I believe they had a similar grade on Charles Cross as well, but there wasn't any like anything that Shane said that was kind of revealing with that. I'm pretty sure they did not have a great grade on Trayvon Walker. That man going number one was, you know, we'll see if Trent Baalke and the Jags are right with that pick. I think is questionable, but that's, you know, we will see. But no, I was very happy. It's about time that we got a right tackle that has played there before, that is just a mammoth of a human being. And I've never seen 340 pounds look so good on somebody, which is wild because he looks so lean. Like, he looks so
he
lean,
does.
Evan Neal.
He really does.
And Thibodeau, I mean, he's a beast. He's definitely a character. He's built for New York. He's very articulate, a really great interview, a lot of energy. And he can ball. So, you know, I had a great night on Thursday. For, you know, because I was stressed about this the whole time, because, like, when you have picks 5 and 7, you can't fuck it up. Like, because if you fuck it up, you know, when is this opportunity going to happen again? Do you know what I mean? And because especially, you know, even though we traded back last year, you know, we got Tony, and then there was the reports a couple weeks ago about Tony getting traded. I'm just like, oh, Jesus. And we could have just stayed put and had... We got Rashawn Slater and fixed our tackle problem. But I would much rather have Tony and Evan Neal than just Rashawn Slater, which is why trading back and to get 2 first-round picks is, you know, it's better than one that's at number 11. I think that's what we picked last year. But, yeah, great win for the Giants. The Jets. New York football has never had such a great draft night. That was – the Jets did amazing, getting Sauce Gardner at 4.
Hey, listen, as long as you can take that off-season championship crown, which, you know, in this case, I guess we'll say the draft night champion crown, and turn it into something, then it doesn't mean anything at all. But, yeah, let's talk about the Jets. They essentially got 4 first-round picks, and that's something that, you know, Sauce Gardner was the guy that we had pegged at 4 in our mock draft. Perfect fit. He's Richard Sherman 2.0. If he pans out, then they go and get Garrett Wilson. They get their receiver that they can pair with Elijah Moore and Corey Davis. Give Zach Wilson a guy who can give you ease the pressure downfield, short. He can play any spot on the wide receiver group. And, you know, I still had J-Mo higher than him just because of the pure speed and the fact that you know what you can get from J-Mo. But, I mean, speed receivers are touch and go depending on how they're used. And then you trade back into the first round to go and grab Jeremiah Johnson, ACC Defensive Player of the Year. I don't know why he slid. I guess, you know, there He's were old. Other good edge rushers.
I think part of it was that compared to the other edges, like he's definitely good. There's something about, and I believe teams use this, is your breakout age. Like, whenever you burst onto this, like, whenever you have, like, a breakout year and what age that is and, like, what age you are in the draft, that kind of is a really good indicator of how good you're going to be. Because Johnson, I think he's, like, 23. He was, like, a redshirt senior, I believe, because he had to transfer from Georgia to Florida State. but Yeah, so he's going to come in and he's going to be able to produce right away. I think it was he has less of a ceiling than the other guys because Thibodeau, this was his third year in college. Like, I think that he's 21 and he has a better athletic profile. Aiden Hutchinson, he doesn't have quite the – he didn't test bad. He still had a great raw athletic score. I don't think he has, like, the bend or, like, the get-off that some of the other rushers do, but he's already, like, a technician with his hands. And Walker, we've already talked about his, you know, his raw athleticism. And if he you know, learns how to play football, learns how to rush the passer, he can be amazing. But I think that's why with Jermaine Johnson. But, yeah, he was rumored at 10 and even at 4.
The Jets and loved him, apparently.
They were trying to trade in. They were trying to trade back in the first round since, like, pick 15 or something.
That makes sense.
They finally got back in, and, you know, then they went with Breece Hall at the top of the second. I know your investment.
And they moved back there, yeah, and that's a great call. And, I mean,
I know your investment in Michael Carter is going to be.
And Michael Carter's still going to do his thing. He showed enough at the end of the year, but when you have a chance to get a guy like Breece Hall, especially the position where the Jets are, and you see it more and more around the league. Mm-hmm. And I posed this question to, I think, to Jake, my roommate. How many teams have a legitimate one-guy workhorse now?
Yeah, no, they have multiple.
A ton of teams have two running backs because the wear and tear, you got to understand, each running back does different stuff. And this is another example of, you know, lightning and thunder. Breece Hall is a good receiver, too, but, I mean, Michael Carter is that pass catcher out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that San Francisco offense, where this, that West Coast offense, you can plug any receiver, any running back into that, and they'll do well. So, I wouldn't really, it's not the same, but, I mean, how much expectation do you think I had on a guy that with Michael Carter's, you know, profile, athletic profile, and what he already produced last year? He's not going to be a 1,000-yard rusher. He's not going to score 10 rushing touchdowns, but, you know, Breece Hall will. But what Michael Carter gives you is, you know, 500 to 600 rushing yards with 400 to 500 receiving yards. And that's something you need for a young quarterback who likes to sling it because, you know, he needs to find that checkdown. And so it works out both ways. It's a good pick that pairs well with what they need. Breece Hall's going to end up being the workhorse by the end of the year, but... You know, I would not discount Michael Carter from that offense because they loved that pick last year and they really wanted him. They were going to take him in the third last year. So, I mean, you know, it definitely did help and what they did was great. But another team that definitely did a lot better than I thought was, you know, the Chiefs. And Kurt said from the very start, they could go double defense. And they did go double defense. They moved up got cornerback Trent McDuffie, which fills a need, and he's an awesome player.
Mm-hmm.
And they went ahead and got
George Karlaftis. They
go George Karlaftis, who Kurt and I are both really high on, and he slots in as an immediate pass rush and help for them. Mm-hmm. And then they turn it around and take Sky Moore in the second round. So they filled their needs, and they definitely did not, you know, they didn't give up a ton to do it.
They didn't reach either.
No, they didn't. And Sky Moore can immediately come in and contribute. It's not like he'll be riding the bench. I mean, he's still a second-round guy. This is still one of the top, you know, 100 players taken in this class.
Yeah.
And I think that jump off from the first round to the second round, the way it's viewed by people, is a lot worse than what it actually is.
Yeah. No, the people, a lot of the... I forget which analyst or whatever was like tweeting it, but between Thursday and Friday, but the top of the second round from like 33 to 50, a lot of teams view that as just you can get whoever fell, quote unquote, that you had a first round grade on. Like those players end up being studs a lot of the time. Like, I mean, you look at couple years ago, even with like the receivers, with the Metcalf, AJ Brown, Debo Samuel,
McLaurin,
like,
and those guys that was sprinkled around. It wasn't just second round guys.
Yeah, like you can find a lot of goons in that area, and so I was, it's the Chiefs and did really well. I did not expect them. I don't know. We thought that the Chiefs and the Packers had to go receiver in the first. They both went double defense, and then they found one of those receivers in Sky Moore and then Christian Watson in the second round. And I think they did
to the Packers. Yeah,
they did really well. I thought that I thought that Brian Gutekunst I thought Aaron Rodgers like fucked his wife or something because he just wouldn't get him a receiver. But he did. I was, you know, a little.
They traded both their second round picks, so they felt comfortable with Watson. So you got to feel like he might have a big role day one. And the thing is, both the Packers and the Chiefs didn't have to move up for a receiver.
Yeah.
Didn't have to go for a receiver in the first round, and they got the two guys that everyone thought they were going to take.
That's
the best part about it.
Yeah. No, they did really well. That's for sure.
And that's the difference between competent organizations and teams that continue to pick at the top of the draft.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then you see a team like, you know, the Ravens. The Ravens had an amazing draft. They added 2 to 3 guys that'll come in and be immediate contributors. But the question mark becomes, you know, they didn't take a receiver. They just sent Marquise Brown to the Cardinals.
How did they get a first for Marquise Brown? That's kind of wild.
No. Marquise Brown's an amazing player.
Dude, he's good. I don't know.
But look at how they've used him. They haven't used him right. Yeah. He's that defense. Kyler knows how to use him. Kyler will find him.
I know.
So it worked out. But, you know, Kyle Hamilton, he's perfect for Ravens culture. Yeah. Tyler Linderbaum, the top center on the board. He's a 15-year starter, even if he's average.
I think that Linderbaum's interesting because, like, he's pretty scheme-specific because he's more of an undersized center, and he's used in that wide zone type of blocking. And that's not what the Ravens really do. Like, they usually have those big dudes, just big mammoth human beings, and they run like a lot of power and stuff like that and gap. They don't really run the most – like wide zone, like a team like San Francisco or the Rams. You know what I mean?
Well, to keep it's going down value. Their list here. Oh, 100%. To keep going down their list here, though, David Ojabo from Michigan, mm-hmm. who had a first round grade until he tore his meniscus.
Yep.
Travis Jones, who a lot of people thought would be gone in the second round. Daniel Falele, another guy who a lot of people thought would be gone in the second round. That's a big guy. Now that one's interesting to me because he's not that run blocker. So that's an anchor right tackle who will keep your quarterback upright in the pass game.
Falele is interesting. I was reading something about Evan Neal and how he went to IMG and how because Evan Neal, when he was in high school, he was 6'7", like 380. He showed up to Alabama and like he went to, while he was at IMG, he would, like, some dude walked in, and it was Daniel Falele, who's 6'8".
Bigger than him.
400. Yeah. He just couldn't stop. He was just, like, stared at him. And they were just like, what are you doing, bro? He was just like, I've never seen anybody bigger than me. And it was just like, okay. So he's, Falele, where did he play? Was it North Dakota State?
Or Minnesota.
Falele was Minnesota. Okay, so he actually played, for a Power 5. Okay. Yeah, he's a big boy. The Ravens, did they have like 7 fourth rounders or something?
They had
something.
Six fourth rounders.
That's nuts.
And they took, you wanna know what the funniest part about it is too?
What?
They took 2 tight ends.
Did they take Likely?
They took Charlie Kohler from Iowa State.
Yeah.
And then they took Isaiah Likely from Coastal Carolina. And Likely's really good. They're both really good.
Yeah.
And I am interested to see how that plays out because they paid Andrews. They have they have the other tight end, the blocking tight end. I completely forgot his name, but they still have him on the roster.
Yeah. That's
crazy. And they the only valuable receiver, the only top level receiver they have is Rashad Bateman. And Bateman was good his first season, but we'll see how that plays out. But they did take a punter, and the punter was not Matt Araiza. It was Jordan Stout from Penn State. And Araiza falls to Buffalo, and you know how Buffalo gets in the winter. So we might see like a 90-yard punt at some point.
He's hell. He's a go. He's the punting god.
The punk god.
The punk god.
And even then, I mean, listen, I love their draft. I had Kaiir Elam to them 3 months ago. I thought he fit perfectly on the opposite side of Tre'Davious White. James Cook in the second round. That's probably the best, outside of Breece Hall, the best running back landing spot. Mm-hmm. A spot where he can make an immediate impact. And, you know, Khalil Shakir gives them another receiving option. No Cole Beasley. Emmanuel Sanders isn't there anymore. So that'll make Josh Allen happy. And really, I mean, you know, they're really the favorite to win the AFC this year. And a very heavy favorite to win the Super Bowl. AFC North,
right?
No, the Bills.
Oh, the Bills. I thought we were still talking about the Ravens. Yeah, I mean, the Bills got a good squad. Like, they just have a good team. And hope Gabe Davis keeps balling on them. But, yeah, I mean, Josh Allen, like I said, I've never been more wrong about a player. And it is what it is. So I'm glad to see him succeed. But, yeah, the Bills, I mean, that's my team. Former Madden 20 Bills club champion. So, fuck it. We're going to rep the Bills.
I got a funny story about this. I was out one night. I was at a 7-Eleven. Yeah. And I had a Dolphin like sweatshirt on, one of my Dolphin sweatshirts on. Mm-hmm. And this girl's next to me, and she goes, and she starts talking about the Dolphins. And she's like, oh, you think they're going to be good this year? You think Tua's really going to be that guy? He hasn't really been all that good. And I was like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just got to wait to see. And she was like, oh, yeah, that's true. I don't know if he'll be good, though. He hasn't really shown it. And I was like, I don't know. We'll see. She goes, oh, I'm not going to tell you what team I'm a fan of. And I was like, you're a Patriots fan, right? And she was just stunned. She was like, oh, how'd you know? And I was like, Jets fans can't talk trash and Bills fans aren't there yet.
Yeah, yeah, basically. That's funny. But yeah, man, it was a wild draft. The quarterbacks, that's something we haven't seen in a very long time. Kenny Pickett at 20. Small hands Kenny Pickett, you know, good for him. It was hilarious because during the draft, I was watching it with my girl, and his girlfriend had a straight bitch face the entire time. This girl did not look in. She just like looked stressed and like not happy to be there. And I'm like, well, I hope this man gets picked. But he got picked over Willis Ritter and Corral. All got selected in the third round. And we had Kurt here saying he wanted Willis to go number 2 to the Lions. And the NFL obviously is much lower on Malik Willis than draft Twitter and social media was.
You know what I think it was? I think that teams were waiting on that run on quarterbacks to happen. And the reality is the quarterbacks next year are going to be much better. From 1 to 10, there's going to be guys that you could probably slot in ahead of the guys in this draft. But my thing is that each of those quarterbacks, Pickett being said that he could be a day one starter. Tomlin said that earlier this weekend.
I'd hope so. He's a first round quarterback. Who do they have there other than
Trubisky?
Fair.
But my thing with it is not only did these quarterbacks fall, but they all fell into good situations. Yeah. They fell into landing spots that we really said that would benefit them.
Yeah.
You know.
No, it did.
Atlanta, Desmond Ridder in Atlanta. Sam Howell in Washington in the 5th round, which was shocking. Matt Corral in the Panthers. The Panthers apparently were enamored with him. Yeah. And was said that they could have taken him at 6.
Really? Jesus. Kurt would have been right. But not well now that they got him.
Willis in Tennessee's the only one, but you can sit a year behind Tannehill. Tannehill has no guaranteed money. Tennessee can move on from Tannehill.
Yeah.
So you never know what happens. And these are good spots where they can come in and really, you know, maybe not this year. Probably not this year. But 1 or 2 years down the line, they could be the guys.
Yeah, I saw something because no one traded to the back of the first round to get a quarterback. I believe it was after the 2020 draft, or the 2020 draft is when it started. But someone made a great point about how the 50-year options, I think they're just, like, there's no decision on them anymore. Like, they just get exercised. or something with the quarterbacks. I could be wrong. I thought I remember seeing that because teams kind of got screwed, or like, you know, with Baker Mayfield and the Browns, like, because they actually have to pay him, like, that money's guaranteed fully. And then the Sam Darnold with the Panthers, like, they have to pay him. Also, with this, like, the, you know, the stigma that comes with being a first round quarterback, because, you know, if you're a decision maker and you miss on a first round quarterback, you know, that's your ass, you're done. But, you know, second or even third round, it's just like, well, we don't have a whole lot invested in him. He doesn't have to be the guy. But, yeah, I mean, you're right. They did go to good situations. Desmond Ridder going to the Falcons, I like that a lot, to be honest. I think so the Falcons were a winner in this year's draft, getting London, Arnold Ebiketti. That dude's really good as the pass rusher from Penn State. And then getting Troy Ridder.
Anderson.
And then getting
Troy Anderson with his 10 athletic score. His 10
yeah,
rafts.
No, I thought
that. And he was positionless. You can play him really anywhere on defense.
Yeah, I thought the Falcons did really well. And like you said, Matt Corral and with the Panthers, you know, they got Ike Ekwonu for one of the tackle spots across from Taylor Moton. And they still have DJ Moore. Who else do they have? Do they still have Robbie Anderson there? But I know they still have DJ Moore there.
They still have Robbie Anderson.
So they at least have two good receivers. So like that's solid. And then it was Sam Howell to the Commanders. I mean, he doesn't have to play right away because they gave up draft capital for Carson Wentz, as the great organization that they are.
He's a good quarterback. I'll die on that hill.
Hey,
but that has nothing to do with me wanting another fantasy quarterback.
Nah, I feel you, bro. But yeah, it was a crazy draft. It's been a long time since we had quarterbacks fall like that much, and just
the Geno Smith year.
Yeah, it was honestly pretty crazy. But yeah, next year's definitely gonna be better.
So let's touch on this then. I don't know how you would want to do it. I was thinking round to round, but even then that's just too much, but we could do round to round. The best selection made and the worst selection made.
So I guess what would like the criteria be? Like either like reach, like would it be like a combo of like, I guess we could do, it could either be like a reach or just why did you pick that position when you needed this? I don't know, I guess we can just do it.
I will say this, and I know where you're gonna go with the first round for the one that didn't make sense to you, and I'm gonna get this out of the way now. The Patriots pick of Cole Strange, I will say this, it's odd at first glance, but when you hear executives talk about him, it does make sense that a team like the Patriots would go for it. So I'm not letting you use that pick as the worst one. So
that's fine. We'll move on from there.
So right. We'll start with the best one from the first round.
The best.
And we'll both go, then we'll go into the worst of the first round. A guy that was just a head scratcher. So I'll let you start.
So value-wise, value meets need. The Jets, number 26, Jermaine Johnson. For someone who was, obviously it was mostly smoke and like rumors that had him possibly going in the top 10. To get him at 26, though, that's really good. They did really well with that. I would say that, and then the Baltimore Ravens getting Kyle Hamilton at 14. I think those two were great, were value met need. The Ravens, they do this all the time. They're just a sound run franchise that. They do best player available pretty much better than everybody else, because they just get good players. Like they let the draft come to them. They accumulate so many picks.
You want to know what the funniest part about that is, though?
What?
It always feel like best player available is a scheme fit for them.
Yes, it is exactly. Well, I think a lot of that is because they do what good coaching staff should do and create schemes to, you know, fit their players. And, you know, yep. and they're a lot of focus for the Ravens is on like versatility, especially on defense. Especially
Kyle Hamilton's perfect with that.
Exactly. So that those would be the two for me. Who are your best picks or picks in the first round?
So for me, I'm gonna start sounding like a broken record with this. Sauce Gardner at four is by far the most perfect selection, especially considering, you know, this guy could be Richard Sherman 2.0. Robert Saleh was in Seattle during Richard Sherman. He was the secondaries coach. I just don't see how much more perfect it gets than that. Yeah. And then another one is, you know, I was a very big fan of the Jordan Davis pick. I really liked, especially considering the Fletcher Cox situation is not as solid as it was in the past. We don't know how much longer he'll be there. So being able to combine those two, considering how well Fletcher Cox gets after the quarterback and how well Jordan Davis plays in the run, it's a perfect fit for them. And then obviously the Trent McDuffie pick by the Chiefs moving up to get him was also awesome. They needed corners. He can play both corner and safety. He could literally be Tyrann Mathieu 2.0 also. We'll see what happens with that. But the head-scratching pick for me was the Dallas Cowboys pick of Tyler Smith. There was rumors that he could fall into the first round, which he does here, middle of the first round, or late first round. But it was head-scratching to me considering that Tyler Linderbaum was still on the board, and they needed a center.
Yeah, I mean, they needed tackle as well. They had to trade Lyle Collins or cut him or whatever for his situation. But, yeah, I don't know, I definitely understand that. Honestly, like, you know, I don't know nothing about Cole Strange. I'm not going to use him. To me, the worst pick of the first, like, I think it was the first overall pick. I don't know what the Jags were doing, man. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You're an organization that is perpetually bad and makes bad decisions, yet you have the number one pick for the second year in a row, and you pick a project.
Balky was on that. Balky was the GM last year when they took Etienne after they had an undrafted guy who rushed for over 1,000 yards and they were paying $400K.
He's just bad. So, I think he's just bad at what he does, to be honest.
And he keeps getting jobs.
Like, it's... I'm not saying that, you know, Aiden Hutchinson has the highest ceiling, but I think he has a pretty... I think he could be, a Bosa. I think he could be one of the Bosas in terms of production. Like, he's already going to come in and be, like... at the end of the year on Madden, I would say Aiden Hutchinson's probably going to be rated, 87 or something. Like, he's going to be good right away. Like, right away.
For put that in terms for people that don't play Madden.
That's a scale of, 0 to 100. 0 to 99.
Put it in terms of, you know, MVP Defensive Player of the Year.
A defensive player of the year type guys are over 95, a Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, Aaron Donald type. 90 plus is your perennial Pro Bowlers, and you know, the higher up you go, more All Pro. And then, you know, 80 and 89, you have very good starters. And,
borderline Pro Bowl guys.
Yeah, borderline Pro Bowl guys, and that's. I think Hutchinson can be that right away, and he still has some room to, he tested well, you know, he was not a freak, but he tested well. And even someone like Kayvon Thibodeau, obviously I love those picks because I'm a Giants fan, but it was perfect. You know, they're incredible, incredible value, incredible players, but someone like him, that dude has all the traits you could want in an edge. That man could end up he's not the prospect that a Myles Garrett was coming out of Texas A&M now, but it's really not that far-fetched to believe that he could be one of those top three, top five pass rushers in the league if he hits his ceiling, because he's already his burst, his bend, He doesn't always have a plan moving like pass rushing, but he already said that Michael Strahan's been his mentor, and I'm like, oh, that's music to my ears, baby. But like those two guys, why you need an edge? Why are you picking a project? Like you the part of the reason why you get these players at valuable positions on these rookie deals is to where you can, you know, get like a margin of their production to what they're being paid. Like that's the whole thing with positional value in the rookie wage scale. If it's gonna take Trayvon Walker till his third or fourth season to even be like above average, like
Yeah.
you wasted half of his contract for the number one overall pick. The number
But they're
one
not going to
guys,
be good. That's the biggest part here. They're
they're
not going
never
to be
gonna
a
be
good
good.
team.
The
No.
Jags, they're never gonna be good. Trevor Lawrence literally
Hey.
went to the worst situation possible, and I hate
Hey,
that for him.
they've been to an AFC champion. They've been to a conference championship game much sooner than my Dolphins and your Giants. So, it's very
Yeah.
tough to say.
Hey, they did that with Blake Bortles as quarterback,
Exactly.
UCF GOAT. But I
UCF
mean, they
GOAT.
built up that they had an amazing defense, like all time pretty much, and then it just kind of dismantled because year to year defense isn't always as consistent as offense. But yeah, I just can't get behind Trayvon Walker as a number one pick. A lot of people had him like at the bottom of their top 10 to inform as far as like prospects, because yeah, his measurables, his athletic testing is great, but it's just for the number one pick, you need a sure thing, basically. Like, especially if it's not a quarterback. If it's not a quarterback, it's got to be the Myles Garrett, the Nick Bosa, like,
Yep, I
yeah.
agree.
But so that's
I
the
agree.
first. That's how I feel about the first round. The second round, some picks that I loved.
I'll tell you mine. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
NFC North, second round, with the exception of the Detroit Lions. Sorry, Kurt. Killed it. And I mean, you know, Packers going Christian Watson. You know how high I am on Watson.
Yep.
The Bears going Kyler Gordon, the Washington cornerback. I had him pegged for a first rounder. That's another
Yep.
great pick. The Vikings going Andrew Booth from Clemson. Another great pick. I also had him pegged as a first round guy. And then one more outside of the NFC North, the Indianapolis Colts going Alec Pierce. There was a tweet that was out maybe a week ago that was saying about Bears fans because he's a local Chicago guy from the
Yeah.
suburbs. And it was like, oh, everyone mocking Alec Pierce to the Bears in the second round. He'll be there in the third. Don't worry. And I sent that to Kurt, and I said, with his skill set, his physicals, and everything, this guy's gone mid-second. He was gone mid-second, and he goes to the perfect situation. He plays that outside role opposite of Pittman with Paris Campbell or somebody, some other receiver playing that slot role. Works out well. Those were kind of some picks that I really, really liked. And then John Mechie to Houston. Not a terrible pick, but it makes me sad because I think Mechie's an awesome player, and I do not know how he'll develop out there.
Yeah, I don't know what's gonna happen with the Texans. They're gonna be in there. That's an interesting, it's an interesting spot because they're in a full rebuild. Like, you know, they traded Watson. They sucked really bad last year. Like, they have Davis Mills for whatever that's worth. He actually looked like pretty decent last year, but yeah. I like Mechie a lot. I know our buddy Jacoby loves Mechie. Because I only watch so many, like I don't really dive too deep into in college football. I watch, you know, watch UCF. I watch some of like the main games. I love Alabama's always on, and Mechie, that dude. I remember 2 years ago in the SEC championship game when what's his face? When I think it was Mac Jones who threw a pick, and then to the Florida DB, and Mechie just destroyed him and like made him fumble, and then Alabama got the ball back. I'm like, yo, I need this guy on my team. Like, he's just a football player. Like, Jesus
Exactly.
Christ, that was insane. But yeah, I think another SEC wide receiver that was a great pick was George Pickens to the Steelers at 52. A lot of people, they view him as like his skill set His injuries and apparently character concerns. He interviewed poorly.
Self-destructive.
Yeah,
As the quote goes, gets in his own way.
Gets in his own way, whatever that means. I don't know him personally. I haven't been acquainted with George Pickens to talk about his character or whatever. But his skill set wise, he's very good. He's definitely very good. I like the Falcons getting Arnold Ebiketie. I'm high on that dude from Penn State. And yeah, the Packers getting Watson. I thought that they hated Aaron Rodgers, but apparently they don't, and they, you know, that's why that they have jobs in the NFL. And
hated him so much they give him $50 million a year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Sky Moore to the Chiefs. That was great. They needed a receiver badly. They got one. I'm trying to look at some others that I liked. Ojabo to the Ravens. We've already said that one. That was fantastic. For a pick that was looked at as a reach, because we praised the Giants in the first round. A lot of people were not very high on Wandale. What was his name? Wandale Robinson from Kentucky. He's a small guy, 5'8". Looked at more of as a gadget guy, but he looks very agile. He can make people miss. But it looks like it's going to be more about like how you scheme him touches and whatnot. What did you think? Where did he rank for among the receivers for you?
I kind of had him and Calvin Austin around the same area. I thought they gave you the same kind of production, late second to mid third, depending on the offense. But this was assuming that guys like Pickens, Watson and Moore would fall, closer first round, late second. Late first, early second, played out differently. But I mean, it's obvious the Giants need playmakers. I mean,
yeah,
zero. How many? One receiving touchdown by a wide receiver last year.
Yeah.
That's got to change. They need guys who you can get the ball to and make plays on their own. Mm-hmm. As much as you trust Daniel Jones, I mean, the Dolphins said this. Tua said this. We're going to go out there and yak the hell out of teams. So
Yeah.
No, that's got to be it for some of these quarterbacks.
Nah, I get it. As people looked at it as a reach, and I understand because there are other better options, you could say, on the board. But I don't know. Personally, for me...
But here's the thing. Are there? I mean, every team sees their board differently.
Yeah, that's true.
These coaches know how they're going to use these guys. So it's a very, different thing. And remember when we talked to Jamar, he said, sometimes teams go best available. It doesn't always work. Teams like the Patriots go with guys they know they can go and get and use right away. So
yeah,
this could be one of those situations where Dable and Sheen know what they're getting, understand what they can get, and go after the guy that they think will produce well for them.
Yeah. No, he's right. Like, a lot of it is the situation, the coaching staff, the scheme, injury luck. But yeah, honestly, at least for me, because I'm not your Daniel Jeremiah, your Dane Brugler, your Mike Renner, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, who goes super deep into knowing all these players. After the first round, I'm kind of just like, and the early second, I know a few players, but after that, I feel like their success really does depend on what. What Jamar said was the scheme fit, the coaching, the situation. And these staffs in the front office, they're looking for traits. They're looking for guys that they can get in the building and develop that they have a plan for. And, it's because honestly, draft talk, draft content, draft grades, things like that. It's not, you can only work off so much information right after it happens. You know what I mean? You can use like consensus big boards and who was available when they picked. But we're not really going to, especially as we get deeper in the draft, we're really not going to know for a couple years. And how many times do people revisit the takes from drafts 3 years ago. It's always hilarious.
This is perfect because I was watching the Tottenham game with my roommate Jake this morning.
Yeah.
We're recording this on May the 1st. We were sitting there, and the games are on Peacock. So the game ended. Peacock just went to its normal whatever programming. 2019 NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
What happened in the 20? And we got right on there during the Seahawks pick when Russell Wilson became the highest paid quarterback. And here's how the two picks that we saw went. LJ Collier, who was comped as Michael Bennett, and DeAndre Baker to the Giants,
mm-hmm.
who was comped as Tre'Davious White. And we just thought that was so funny. We literally sat there and questioned if LJ Collier was still in the league. And he is.
He is?
He's still with Seattle. He's still with Seattle.
Good for him. DeAndre Baker, I don't know where he's at. Probably
practice squad with the Chiefs.
Gotcha. He got some dice games to rob or whatever the hell that he was doing that got him kicked off.
And a buddy of ours, his dad represented him.
Yeah, he got off, but
and he got him off.
Nah, it is funny to look back because we make these bold proclamations about, you know, oh, this team did great, this team did horrible, this and that, and you can, like I said, you can only go off of, like, you know, the amount of picks, who was available, the big boards, but, you know, after the fact, you gotta wait to see if they produce.
Yeah. I love it, and I think draft coverage, there's really only so much because, I mean, especially with the media, and it's very tough, and obviously you default. A guy like Mel Kiper has no background in football.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really in that position because he's really the first guy
who did it
to have done this draft coverage. And that made him at that level, you know. Then you have guys in the media who were scouts for team, worked in front offices.
Yeah.
So there's an understanding. But, you know, I think it's really interesting. And, I mean, for us, it's just kind of like, okay, who got better? Who got worse?
Yeah.
There's really no getting worse in this situation, but who didn't help themselves? And in this situation, I mean, the Jaguars, I will say, for me, they bailed themselves out because I love Devin Lloyd. I think he's that guy at linebacker. And especially when you consider, they let go of Miles Jack this offseason. So he can come in and, I don't want to say he'll be a complete replacement, but he can fill that role.
A lot of people like Lloyd.
And so that's kind of the situation. And then, you know, you never know with these late round guys too, and you know, you can't sit there listening to fantasy Twitter and these fantasy guys on these draft stocks. And it's like,
I think the teams that had two picks, a lot of them got better. Giants got better. Jets got better. Saints got better. The Eagles obviously got better. You know, the Ravens, they got better.
The Packers, the Chiefs.
Like, they got better. And, I mean, the Packers.
It's all hypothetical. I mean. Look at Isaiah Wilson a couple of years ago. He was supposed to come in, be that right tackle for the Titans, and he played, what, like 3-4 games for them before getting cut after his...
Yeah.
You know, so it really does matter a lot on these situations, but as we had out of this, I think the thing that's going to be more interesting is the second round of free agency. You still got guys like Odell. You still got guys like Jarvis. You still got guys like J.C. Treader. You still got Jadeveon Clowney, Tyrann Mathieu. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that shakes out. And, you know, it's not something that we'll touch on today, but probably by next week we'll see a couple of those dominoes fall. And once those dominoes fall, I mean, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, no, and for sure, like, the first round of free agency is you got to plug those needs right away. Then that way, so the draft, you have less glaring needs and you don't have to reach for players. But then after the draft happens, you do have to, you know, fine-tune your roster a little bit and get some guys in there that, you know, maybe the board didn't fall the way it wanted it to and you weren't able to get, like saw a team like the Jets, they probably got to get some sort of tackle since they didn't get, like, an Ike Ekwonu or Evan Neal. They went corner, they went edge with Johnson, they went receiver with Garrett Wilson. It was very entertaining. So many trades. I thought the Lions got a lot better too, getting Jameson Williams and Aiden Hutchinson. I think they're going to help them right away. And then they have two picks next year in the first round, because Goff's contract is going to be much easier to get off of. I'm sure Kurt would have a lot of opinions on the Giants, not the Giants, the Lions. He very much thought they were going up to get Malik Willis at 12.
He said, I can't believe they passed on him four times.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL don't believe he's that guy. They don't think he's him. I'm like, okay, we'll see. We'll see.
But I will say, especially with bringing up a guy like Jarvis Landry and going back to that A.J. Brown situation, I know Landry was looking for $20 million on his next deal, and the reports are saying that Brown only was asking for $22 million a year. And he ended up with what, like a 5-year?
4-year, 100 mil. So 25 annual.
25. Yeah, so, hey, you never know how it goes with the NFL, but, you know.
It's been the wildest offseason.
It has. You got any more closing comments? Because I can't really talk about the Dolphins. I like Tyndale.
Yeah.
He'll come in next to Baker and produce, but, I mean, this draft wasn't for us. You know, Tyreek Hill's a good first and second round pick. Jarron Armstrong, also good pick.
Yeah.
They filled their needs, and, you know, we'll see what happens. Next year's going to be a more important year with two first-round picks. So.
For sure.
I just don't have anything to say about the Dolphins. Yeah.
I'm a happy Giants fan. We got some talent in the building. We have, you know, a real general manager, and it gave me some hope, some actual hope. Not I'm going to talk myself into liking this because, you know, the team I like. It was very entertaining. So many trades. I came away and everything I wanted to happen happened for my team specifically. And it was an entertaining time. And made a little bit of money off of the draft slot of one of the quarterbacks we discussed. So that it was a good weekend.
We won't name.
So I think that's a good way to end everything. So I appreciate y'all for tuning in. Thank you for listening to Don't Drop the Ball. Next week, I'm not sure what we're going to cover, since we just did the draft recap, but we'll definitely find something entertaining to talk about.
We'll figure out the biggest news, and then, I mean, hey, we can go historical. I mean,
yeah,
we can talk. There's a lot we can talk about, and there's a topic that came up recently. It escapes me right now, but there's a topic, and I mean, we can start previewing the season too. I mean, there's a lot, and yeah, we're heading into training camp. We're still waiting on the Baker situation, the Debo Samuel situation,
right?
Both got more complicated after the draft,
for sure. No like easy trades, but yeah. That'll do it, y'all. Appreciate you guys for tuning in, and we'll catch y'all next week.
It's an exciting time to be a football fan.
Absolutely. We'll catch y'all next week.